You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Watching Tottenham on a Tuesday night.
You play the... Oh, what a night. What an absolute disaster. Welcome to the pod, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. You join us off the back of what was not only a poor performance, but a pretty disastrous result. Jude Summerfield, how are you? Like, just in case this is the first time listening to the pod, if Spurs lose, Jude's runs sort of tend to get a little bit longer or a little bit sort of more, I guess, perhaps that you're in deeper thought on your runs. Is that fair?
Yeah, I gassed myself out. Well, I didn't do one yesterday. I managed to hold off. I did one this morning and it was just under 7 miles. But I gassed myself out.
That's a lot
of
thinking.
Yeah, I'm a deep guy. I gassed myself out after about 2 miles, just being like, yeah, I'm going to go really, really fast. I got all this fuel. And then like lactic acid started burning up in my calves and it all went to shit just like yesterday.
What beautiful poetry.
It went to shit.
So Sean, just before we started, I said to Sean Walsh, who's also on the pod today, I'm still really sad. And Sean just went, yeah, I'm over it.
Wow.
This is the most fine I've been after a North London derby loss in a while, because it just felt like that is exactly what we deserved. And I kind of, for me personally, I kind of had my high about 37 minutes in. So, you know, I won yesterday. I don't care.
That is true.
You lot can all suffer. I won.
Sean just going, I got off. I got there. I made it.
Hunter, are you able to dine out at all on Lamella? Or
no, not at all. No. At halftime, I very aggressively tweeted that give Arsenal the 3 points now. Their club has been disrespected more than any win could possibly do for them. But come full time, turns out we'd done our club quite a disservice. So no, the Lamella thing was gorgeous, but it was a moment of beauty in a otherwise horrible storm.
Yeah, someone described it as the diamond in the rough. I think that might have been Miguel Delaney described it as a diamond in the rough, which is a fair analogy. And just on in terms of your point there, Hunter, I think I said something along the lines of call the game off after he'd scored. And I bloody wish they had.
Yes.
Really wish they had.
Yes.
Dan, what was your view from... You were at the Emirates. What was your view of it all?
I just haven't really got anything new to say, unfortunately.
You're beaten down.
Yeah, I've run out of opinions. I think I feel the same as I have done for a lot of games this season. I just feel that tactically it felt like the wrong approach. And yeah. Spurs were punished for it, really. And that was a shame, particularly in the context of the Lamella goal. I feel gutted about the Lamella goal. I think, you know that great Harry Kane curling finish in the mask that Spurs kind of always show clips of in the build-up to every North London derby kind of endlessly. I think that one's always kind of coloured by what happened afterwards. The fact that Spurs conceded a really sloppy equaliser against 10 men Arsenal.
Yeah, Coquelin was off, yeah.
So, you know, that I can't help but watch that go on and enjoy it, but think of what happened. And I think, you know, Lamela, it's going to be even worse. You know, it's going to be played a lot. And I think, you know, club social channels particularly will make the most of it. It'll be on Premier League years. It'll be on compilation of the season. But it will always be part of this dreadful performance where Spurs just didn't show up and felt like they were almost set up to fail, really, and didn't take the game to an Arsenal side that were there for the taking, I think. So that's a shame, because that goal deserves to kind of be in a much more celebratory context, I think.
That's such a good point. I mean, there's so many goals over the course of history that have been wonderful goals that have been part of defeats. And I guess one of the best examples of this that I can think of is Mandzukic's bicycle kick in the Champions League final.
Unbelievable.
I mean, it's just an incredible goal worthy of winning a final. And then they go out and get absolutely thumped off the back of it. And it means nothing. Mm. Do you know what? I think it's quite interesting. Last week we had two approaches, didn't we? That we were sort of trying to work out how they would flow if we utilised either one of these approaches. One was to try and let Arsenal blow both of their feet off. And the other was to try and go and put them in a position where we either forced an error or we just took the game to them and didn't give them a chance to kind of do it themselves. And I have to say, I'm trying to work out what we even did, whether we even did either of them.
I think it was the former. I think it was an attempt to play in a similar fashion to the home game, the 2-0 win, where Spurs had 30% possession. I think that was the idea, you know, let them have the ball, but just be primed for quick counter-attacks and be primed to kind of hit them on the break and, you know, do what Spurs did to them at home. And I think Arsenal were expecting it. And I think, you know, they were shutting down pretty much every Spurs counter or attack immediately. They were forcing Spurs deeper. They were kind of ruthlessly exploiting the weakness in the side, which was down the right flank or their left flank. And they, you know, kept the ball very, very well and played, you know, a nice game of progressive football against Spurs' kind of reactive game of fairly negative football. And I think, to echo, I think what Sean just said, I think Spurs got what they deserved, really.
Mm.
It was actually interesting that you said on the pod last week that, you know, we had the two approaches, either let Arsenal shoot themselves in the foot or kind of press them into it. The commentators, Martin Tyler and Smith, actually brought up three or four times when the game looked so kind of desolate and we just looked without such direction that they were saying, like, it seems like Spurs are going to try and wait for Arsenal to shoot themselves in the foot here. And I just thought it was just like, it's so obvious and it's so not working.
Mm. Well, I said on our WhatsApp group, didn't I? When was the last time this actually came off for us?
The last Arsenal game.
Yeah. And it was brought up. It was probably the last Arsenal game. And you've got to think, you know, Arteta's not a moron. He's going to set up for two stars that Spurs are going to come with. They're the two stars who are either going to play on the front foot and try and press them or sit really deep and wait for them to... Arsenal, as Dan said, they were so ready for yesterday. They pressed Alderweireld when he had the ball. They let Sanchez have the ball and let him just loft it into midfield over and over. I mean, the amount of turnovers from that exact ball over the back line, goes to Alderweireld, pressed, ball goes to Sanchez. All right, you can do it because we know you haven't got the passing range. Ball's turned over. Anyway, is this the good section? I've sort of...
No, this is just more general natter at the top. But we can... The thing is there's so many things that, like, even just while... I don't know if you guys have had this so far, but literally while everyone's been talking about their individual bit, I've gone, like, in my head, I've gone, like, oh, God, and then another thing. Like, I started thinking about another thing that's wound me up or annoyed me. And even just listening to you there, Hunter, talk about Davinson Sanchez... Weirdly, I thought Davinson Sanchez actually had quite a good game in terms of his defensive contributions other than the penalty, but it certainly reminded me of the fact that I thought Ndombele had one of his worst games in a Spurs shirt, and the fact that we couldn't escape any sort of press was largely down to the fact that we couldn't rely on him at all. Højbjerg, another one, like, it just kind of like the dominoes keep ticking, do you know what I mean?
But what we've seen in games when we've set off in the second half is Ndombele become completely unaffected. Like, it can't affect games there. That's what I mean. We've seen that over and over and over. So to say he had one of his worst games, I absolutely agree. But also, it doesn't play to his strengths. It doesn't play to Bale's, Kane's, Son's, Lucas's. But I don't know whose strengths that tactic plays for, who was on the pitch. But anyway, I'm sure we'll come on to it.
Yeah, this is why I asked the question at the top. I think it's really interesting that we've said, like, that we were going to sit off, but then we played the 11 that plays on the front foot. So I don't really understand. Anyway, as you said, to be continued. We'll save Lamella for the beautiful, because we can do him and the ugly together. I wonder whether there's anything good that we take from this game. I mean, it started good in the fact that Aubameyang was late.
Yeah, are we saying that's going to be good from our camp? Aubameyang couldn't be asked to get there on time in his chromed out Lamborghini. The one that I was going to say was, I thought Reguilon had a decent game. He managed to get beyond the halfway line when he probably wasn't supposed to, and he kept Saka very quiet, which is, you know, no mean feat. I mean, Saka's having a terrific season. I thought he had a good game, and it's good that he hasn't been called up for the Spain squad. So he just can sit at home and stay fit for 2 weeks. Thank you.
And I think there's a few of those in the Spurs squad, isn't there, that aren't going to travel, which is a real treat. I mean, it's absolute touch. But we're really clutching at straws.
Lucas, I've just sort of come round to him the last few weeks. I mean, I think he just showed a bit of fight yesterday. He showed a bit of bottle that perhaps was missing elsewhere. And a 2-1 down, he was the guy. You know, he tried to Wolfsburger them, which I quite enjoyed at one point.
He did really well.
Run through everyone and just managed to get past about three and then came up short. But he was the guy, not only winning the free kicks, but taking most of them at the death, and his son being off the pitch. And perhaps he would have taken them if he'd been on. But Lucas was decent, I thought. And I think, you know, he's earned the right to be the kind of number 10 for the time being. And I don't think anyone really has a problem with that anymore. But yeah, it's slim pickings in the good section, has to be said.
Shawny, you must have loads.
Oh my God, I actually... No, I have nothing. I have nothing to say. Hunter, can you splice the Mourinho clip where he says, I have nothing to say?
Nothing to say.
There is nothing. It is only bad and ugly today.
Yeah, that's upsetting, isn't it? Jude,
Kane almost scoring a free kick.
I was going to put that in the beautiful. The second time. That's about it.
Oh, is that
he's
beautiful?
He's going to be it forever.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Weirdly, I did feel like when he stepped up to the free kicks, I was like, maybe today's the day where he does it.
Yeah, this is all like made for him. And then you just sort of have to pinch yourself a little bit and then sort of remind yourself that the ball usually travels into row Z when he stands over one. So Roy of the Rovers or not.
let me chuck this out there though, Sean. I ping this to you. I realise that as Spurs fans, we're all in a position where it's sacrilege to ever say that you don't want Spurs to beat Arsenal, you don't want Spurs to pick up a point against Arsenal. Would it have been, like, just from a narrative point of view, just ridiculous had Spurs ended up, I don't know, Harry Kane stays on side and the goal's allowed, or he scores from the free kick, or Davinson Sanchez puts that chance away? Are we sitting here having a different conversation?
I think we have a bit, like, we have like 10 or 15 minutes where we're just kind of laughing our asses off that how the hell did we get anything from this game? Like, this, it was just like so kind of Arsenal to kind of let that happen. But I think that we're kind of level-headed in that we can recognise how bad we were yesterday. And it'd be similar to the West Ham game, isn't it? Because we didn't play really in the West Ham game until we were 2-0 down and it was pretty much too late. We didn't play yesterday until we had 10 men and we had nothing to lose and, you know, we had to throw everything at it. But yeah, for sure, it would have been really funny, but I think it would have been hard to see over just a horrendous performance.
I think there's nothing really more damning that we can throw out around that style than the results any time Spurs have played any side in the top half of the table. I mean, I don't know how many games it is off the top of my head, but I'd assume it's somewhere near 7 or 8 that we've played against teams in the top half, and we haven't beaten any of them. And that is really, really worrying. But it also is kind of like a little bit of a... You sort of flick it and you're like, surely, off the back of another one, you just go like, okay, we've got to do something different now.
The worry, right, is that it's not pragmatism. It's just kind of ideology. I think that's the concern. I mean, pragmatism doesn't mean playing defensive football. And we've had this conversation on this pod before. I feel like, again, I've just run out of things to say.
Welcome to Groundhog Day.
It means playing the best possible style to get a win. And I think most people would agree that, given Arsenal's relative strengths and weaknesses, the best way to beat them would have been to try and put, you know, Luiz and Gabriel under some sustained pressure and try and force a mistake out of Xhaka and Luiz and try and just press them and attack them and go at them. So that would have, you know, been the pragmatic way, but it just doesn't look like Mourinho ever wants to do that. You know, it looks like he wants to win in the style that admittedly worked really well in autumn and obviously got those results against City and Arsenal at home, 2-0 wins that were really kind of patient and controlled and sort of worked perfectly and were kind of classic Mourinho. But it just hasn't worked since December for whatever reason. And, you know, whether that's, whether that's just because the squad's not capable of doing it anymore or whether it's because teams have just worked it out, it doesn't really matter. You know, there needs to be a kind of different way now, I think. And yesterday felt like the perfect time to do that. And it was just doubly frustrating that it didn't happen.
I mean, it's definitely not pragmatic to limit your best player up front to about 30 touches all game when he's had a game against like Palace where he scored twice and assisted twice and is generally in incredible form. And then you're asking him to have 5 minutes at the end to try and salvage the result at the very end of the game.
Yeah. Just spot on, Jude. Just spot on. And I think there's the feeling that we're all left with is just utter frustration, because you could see 15, 20 minutes in what the game plan was, and that it was just, you know, having watched us play so well, having watched Harry Kane get on the ball and dominate teams and you know, us playing this new style of football on the front foot, it just felt so frustrating that we weren't going to see that. And to Dan's point, you know, those last 10, 15 where we put them under some mild pressure, they completely crumbled against 10 men. And there was two or three times where we pressed them right up to the top of the pitch and Leno just kicked it straight into touch. And you sort of think, as Dan said, it becomes a question of whether this is his principles that we're going up against rather than anything else. And
yeah, let's unpack that a bit though. So if we're talking about ideology, is the critique there that it completely blinds people to the idea that Arsenal are just there for the taking, as opposed to any kind of pragmatic approach? Or is the critique that it's just that approach will always be used, we'll never deviate from it, because it's almost like he's trying to prove a point by using that approach?
You know, as Dan said, he has been... He will argue that he's been proven right on thousands of occasions throughout his career. And then with Spurs earlier this season, it worked against Arsenal once and it worked against City once. The truth is, though, we've been doing that. We've all been watching the games. We continued doing that throughout December, throughout January, and it failed over and over again. And then we started playing towards the back end of February a more progressive style of football that started working, pulling teams apart, albeit minnows, of, you know, in relative size, but still Premier League opposition. And then to just completely throw all that away in an effort to... I mean, this is the question, right? Was it the way he genuinely thought that Arsenal could be beaten? Or was it more of like, this is my style of football and you're going to be beaten by my style of football?
I think the easiest way to unpack it for Spurs fans is a comparison with Pochettino, because Pochettino's rhetoric was always... We don't worry about the opposition. You know, he'd literally say that most weeks when he was asked about their strengths and weaknesses. It would always be, we're focusing on ourselves. And he was an ideological manager in the same way that Pep was, and that he would normally always play the same style. And it would always be kind of high press, progressing the ball up the pitch, lots of energy, blah, blah, blah. Whereas Mourinho is supposed to be the opposite, and he's supposed to be a pragmatist, and he's supposed to analyse the opposition, work out where their strengths and weaknesses are, and then base his game plan on that. And so my point is really that, you know, most people would look at Arsenal and think their weaknesses were kind of being pressed into mistakes and being got at. But that's not what happened, which sort of suggests that in his own way, Mourinho's got a kind of philosophy, which is that for these big games, these away games against direct rivals and sort of other top six teams, he just wants to play in that certain way. And I think, you know, I don't think we should put it all on Mourinho there. We have got to be balanced and maybe, you know, look at the players. And I don't think, you know, there's an element whereby, you know, he can't legislate for Ndombele, you know, messing up two or three counter-attacks with poor passes. He can't legislate for Ndombele, for Højbjerg being, you know, sloppier than he's been for a while and giving away lots of fouls. He could legislate for Doherty. I find that quite
funny. Yes, the legislation was well written by that point on Doherty.
Yeah, I found that selection decision really odd, because I think Aurier's, you know, we disagreed on it last time, but he's generally been good and Doherty generally hasn't. So I wasn't quite sure what Mourinho was thinking with that one.
The even odder thing was the substitute to kind of accommodate for how bad Doherty was playing, in that he took one of our last remaining attacking threats off in Bale to bring on Sissoko so that we could play double right back, and it still didn't really work. Mm. And because when Bale came off and Ndombele came off a few minutes later, I was kind of looking around at our guys looking, who the hell is going to score a goal? Who the hell is going to create something now? Mm. Like, I was really worried about that, and to just do it to accommodate this crap right back when an actually now competent right back is on the bench, or you could have even just placed a Sissoko right back instead. And it's just
who did we have on the pitch at that point? We had like Lamella, Lucas, and Sissoko as the three behind Kane.
Then Dele came on a few minutes later, and it was
very much how on earth are we going to get the ball to Kane with these lads.
I don't think that those guys have been on the pitch at the same time all season. I really don't.
No, I was going to say that the substitutes were a really quick way of making our attack even less, even more disjointed than it had been prior to that. Because as we all know, Sissoko, as good as he is at all the defensive side of the game, his attacking side just isn't sharp enough when a team sits deep. So he becomes essentially useless in those last 10, 15 minutes. And then Dele's trying everything that he can do, but he's better when he's closer to Son and Kane. So yeah, the substitutes weren't great yesterday. And I think all of us had a sinking feeling as soon as, I'm not saying Bale had a terrific game by any stretch of the imagination, but when him coming off for Sissoko was a real a sinking moment. I don't know if that's how you felt.
Well, I certainly felt as if there was a moment in the game where I sort of had this weird state of panic, which is odd because I don't know why I was panicking, considering that I'd watched the previous 60 minutes unfold exactly how kind of we've seen happen on a number of occasions. But it just sort of almost like it was a bit of a shot in the arm that I looked at the clock and saw there was 30 minutes left to go. And I was like, we're in a North London derby. Like, this can't be happening now. Like, we just can't be doing this now. Like, and I completely get pragmatism, and I completely kind of get the idea that it's not ideal losing Son so early on. But seeing Bale go off, just it really threw me, because I was that is the one game in the season where I kind of don't want the team to be that pragmatic. Mm-hmm. I want them to like cap their emotion but use that emotion as fuel and absolutely go after Arsenal, you know. And I just didn't feel that was there. So then with about half an hour to go, particularly after we'd seen Bale go off, I was just like, I don't know where we're going to score. I don't know where this is, like, how are we not feeling the walls closing in on us? How are we not feeling this sense of urgency and a sense of desire to go out and play the game on our terms as opposed to on Arsenal's, which was really baffling. I think Dan made a really good point, though, about trying to have an element of balance. And so I do want to kind of look at the players that underperformed, because I think Højbjerg's one that we've all lauded this season at so many points, when he's just been fantastic and been the kind of leader and marshal of that midfield, and we've loved his performances. Yesterday, Jude, it just felt like it was just it's okay to have him because people have him. It was just the wrong time for him to have one of those days where it just didn't happen for him.
Yeah, I thought there was one tackle, maybe the fifth minute or some one quite early, where he snapped into one quite early. I thought maybe he was, because he's had a little rough patch recently. I thought maybe he was back up for a big game. But yeah, I think just positionally he was caught out, and I think he was on the side of Smith Rowe, who was playing on the left, who seemed to be giving Doherty all sorts of problems, and Højbjerg didn't really know whether to get across and help out or just track Smith Rowe, and like he ended up just sort of in no man's land really. And whenever they got down the left, Arsenal, they were getting a lot of joy from sort of cutting the ball back to the edge of the box. And I think Ndombele was alongside him, but he was just a little too late in getting out, and it was all very last ditch. Højbjerg wasn't particularly good, and I think you're allowed one every now and again. You just want to see a bit more in a North London derby. And when he's so good at laying that platform, and we just couldn't get it at all, it was a massive, massive miss in that game.
Yeah, and something that he's got in common with Son, we should talk about the Son injury as well, Sean, but something that Højbjerg's got in common with Son is that they have just played a brutal amount of minutes. And like we kind of made the joke on this pod a few times, and I've seen you make it a few times in tweets, Sean, that like Son will be played until he literally can't anymore. And we found out what that point is.
Yeah, I think the only time Son has had a muscle injury since his first season here was earlier this season when he came off at halftime against Newcastle, but then was back 6 days later when we beat Man United at Old Trafford. Like, he's so kind of durable, that kind of works against him. And now it's really like kind of like a real kind of yardstick moment, because it's like, if Son can get injured now, then who's next? Like, is Højbjerg really going to be that durable? How long till he kind of, maybe it starts with here. Maybe this is like Højbjerg's first bad game in a long time, and his body just can't hack the minutes anymore. When's Kane gonna have another injury? Because the one earlier in the season was more like an impact one. It's just really kind of worrying when, because Mourinho said it pretty much yesterday, like Spurs and Arsenal are probably two of the most fortunate teams in the league in terms of injuries right now. Mm. And now we've lost one of our two best players to it. And that kind of totally negates our game plan. So it's, we're lucky we've got an international break coming up.
Yeah. I just want to go back to the point about the players taking the blame. I absolutely think some of the players didn't turn up yesterday, and Dan's absolutely right. You do have to split the blame. But I think at the same time, you're the manager. You're supposed to pick the team that's best suited to the style you're going to play, to the way you're going to play. And you put the players in the positions where they're going to perform the best that they can, right? And so an instance of this is playing Bale and Doherty down a wing where Arsenal's best attacks tend to come from. Feels really naive as a manager, because Bale's not going to track all the way with Kieran Tierney. He's going to run him ragged. And Doherty hasn't had a great season. I just think in that instance, I know there would have been uproar if Bale hadn't started, but only because we didn't know that there was going to be this sort of sitting off, sitting deep, the low block. If you'd said, right, we're going to play Lucas on the right, you know, Dele through the middle and Sonny and Bale up there, it would have made more sense with the style we were going to play, because Lucas is going to track all day. He's going to go all the way with Kieran Tierney. He's going to make sure that Doherty's covered at all times. They got so much joy down there. And by the time we did anything to stop it, it was basically too late.
And I should be doing my job here and playing devil's advocate. The argument I see presented a lot on Twitter is that we don't give Jose enough props when it goes well. And then when it doesn't, we don't give any sort of blame to the players. We just jump on Jose's back. Yeah, when it goes well and things are good, we say, well done, Gareth Bale, and Ndombele, Harry Kane. I wonder whether perhaps it's the approach that makes it harder to go after the players in this situation, considering the last month that we've had.
Absolutely. We've just watched them thrive for a month, play the best football we've seen all year, and pull apart teams. Then we revert to this and they all look a bit lost again. The system goes out the window. It's so disjointed. They couldn't pass 5 yards yesterday. That is not Jose Mourinho's fault, but it does fall back into how we were playing before. And it does suggest that how could Jose watch the last month, watch what had happened in the month before that, and then go, okay, do you know what? We're going to revert back to it. And hopefully this time is the one where you guys get it right. I know people say we're too harsh on them when it loses, because yesterday it became all about just the victory. And as it's been said before, when the victory doesn't come, then it feels really bad. Do you know what I mean? And also, I think we've been very positive about Jose in the last month. I think he's completely changed his tune in the last month. He's found a way of getting our best players onto the ball and really harrying teams. And I said on the last podcast, I love the way we've been pressing teams. It's such a refreshing change. And it also proves that our players can do it. That was the other thing. It's not like we've been going out and conceding loads of goals. We've been scoring loads of goals, conceding very few. Clearly, not putting the pressure on the back line has been really helping. But I do understand when people say we put too much onto Jose after losses, but it just feels like it was a decision made by him yesterday that didn't help our team, and the watch was terrible. It's just a bad watch.
I've just seen the headline from Barney Rene in The Guardian from last night from his match report, and I think that kind of sums up why the kind of criticism of Jose are so fierce compared to the players. It's Mourinho's plan of sitting deep and winning with Rabona comes unstuck. that is absolutely perfect.
Yeah, very good, very good. But that's something he believes in, isn't it? Those individual moments. He believes in mistakes. He thinks you should wait for the other team to make mistakes. He believes in individual brilliance. He thinks if you have the better players, you should win the game because of individual brilliance. You know, we know that these are things he believes. But Arsenal were ready yesterday, and our players didn't get it together. Didn't make it happen.
Let's do the beautiful and the ugly together. Like, for the first time ever on this pod, we'll merge the two, because finally there is a performance that, as if it's so easily, if I asked you last week, if there's going to be one person that manages to combine them both, who will it be? You would have put your house on it, wouldn't you? You would have put your house on it.
The duality of Eric Lamella. Absolutely beautiful.
He's literally the two masks.
Like that moment before the first goal against Dinamo being like everything, sort of the perfect Lamella moment. There was the kind of somehow managing to foul someone while turning or dribbling or refusing to use his right foot. But then this game was like even more Lamella, like even more peak Lamella. But I mean, it felt really oddly characteristic, but he's actually never been sent off for Spurs before.
Yeah.
The second one in his career. But at the same time, that felt really in character, just because I feel like it's been coming for about 8 years.
Can I just give you a stat? It's been coming for 30 yellow cards.
Wow.
30 yellow cards.
It was, and you could feel it.
Gets booked in the North London derby.
Yeah.
I can't speak for Mourinho because I don't know what's happened in the last two. I don't know, maybe Lamella was injured, but Pochettino used to always start in the North London derby, get booked and take him off.
Mm.
And that was like a theme. And Spurs always got a bit worse and a bit less intense when he went off, actually. So yesterday, obviously, him being a sub, it was much harder to take him off. So perhaps that was, you know, perhaps that was the kind of clincher in the end, the fact that he couldn't really be substituted. But I mean, Lucas did an interview afterwards where he said, like Eric does Rabonas all the time in training. And you know, players say that kind of stuff a lot. And a lot of the time you're like, yeah, sure. You know, you're just kind of saying that because it sounds good. But in this case, like, I totally believe that he's always doing.
I reckon that's all he does in training. I reckon he doesn't shoot.
He's crossing from the right in training. He does Rabonas.
Yeah. So I saw a tweet that said Eric Lamella woke up today and chose Puskás and death And I was like, that's perfect encapsulation. I've never seen a player come on the pitch at 150% angry.
Puss gas and death. He literally so spot on, is it? Because he was going to clatter someone.
We came on and he just kicked. Who was it? He came on, kicked Xhaka.
Kicked Xhaka and Louise.
Kicked Louise. And I was like, there's no way he finishes the game today. He's come on. He's come on hot. So hot.
He really was coming in on fire, wasn't he? Like, and the thing was, is that I don't know about you, Jude, but I loved that 10-minute period where I was like, yeah, like, that's a North London derby. Don't get sent off. Stay on the right side of it. But as the game went on, and even though he'd been booked, he was still flying into challenges. I was like, oh, no, stop.
He was flying in when the ball was like on the touchline as well, or it was just about to go out, and he's getting 10 feet off the ground and like studs up.
About to go out right for our throw-in.
He wants blood. He's out there for blood, nothing else really. Yeah, I mean, he is someone who injects a little bit of shithousery, I suppose, and there was very little of that anywhere else from Tottenham's forward players anyway, so that was nice. And that, as a fan, you do watch that and sort of think, right, yeah, come on, let's have it. But it didn't really get any more than that. I liked his reaction to when he did get sent off. He was going like, me, this guy, really?
He was probably more saying,
we did
after I've just kicked everyone for 30 minutes, this is what I'm getting sent off for. Have you not seen
that's it? The final straw, is it? I was just moving him away.
Yeah.
So, the ugly side, it was very, very frustrating. I feel like in the ugly, we should also we should just touch on the pen. I want just to get everyone's opinions on this, really, and see where people are at with it. Because I just thought it was the most bizarre sequence of football I've possibly ever seen in a North London derby. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Has anyone ever seen someone miscue a shot and win a penalty?
There are guys on Arsenal pods right now saying what we've been saying about Lamela, about Lacazette, in that it's the most Lacazette thing to completely and absolutely fuck up a shot like that and still somehow win a pen and score the pen. Honestly, when I saw it firsthand, I thought, oh my God, what a challenge. And VAR's going to overturn it. And then you look back at it, it's like, oh, Lacazette did that. Oh, okay. Okay. Sanchez just coming to Inclair. Okay. All right. Okay.
He's done it.
Fair enough, Michael Oliver.
What needs to go in the ugly here is everything that leads up to the goal. You know, the goal that was disallowed against Fulham, when I said just an absolute catalogue of mistakes, errors. Well, that was it again. Just like, one mistake's made. The second mistake's made. Oh, where's the centre back? Oh, he's made a tackle. Oh, he's taken him out despite a complete miscue from Lacazette. It was just Lloris's kicking, which you know my views on Lloris's kicking. It's not very good. And then I think Sanchez does everything right, to be honest. And if Lacazette catches it, ironically, it's probably not a penalty, but I think it probably is a penalty. And Mourinho sort of controlling the narrative to make the post-match all about, oh, the penalty decision. It detracted from what had been a really disappointing performance all in all.
I wonder whether we should be in any... Mourinho was aggrieved, Dan, post-match. He definitely wanted to control that narrative, didn't he? He wanted to kind of move it towards the idea that there is no explaining Michael Oliver's decision, which you've seen this happen time and time again. Did you think there was any validity to that?
I thought the penalty...
Go on!
I thought the penalty was kind of... a penalty, but I could also sympathise. It was sort of like if someone spanks a pass out of play and they, you know, they get clattered in the middle of the park, that's a foul, even if they've already given away the ball. In the same way that just because Lacazette had completely miscued the chance, I think Sanchez still caught him and took him down, and you know, arguably or definitely kind of ended his chances of recovering the situation. So I didn't have a huge amount of sympathy for Mourinho's view that it kind of Michael Oliver should do the interview himself. I don't agree that would really get us anywhere. It would just increase the scrutiny on referees, I think. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't really blame Mourinho. You know, he is, you know, he's always done this. You know, he's taken the heat off both himself and his team and tended to put it on external factors like referees. You know, and a lot of the time that can be effective for him and the players, and that was kind of inevitably what he was going to do.
Doesn't feel like there's too much argument against then on here. So, Hunter, I know you're doing an interview of Jermaine Genius today. Maybe you can take it up with him.
God, he's had a tough 24 hours, hasn't he? He's really put his neck out there, though. Like, after a derby, to really go that hard on the subject is just brave, I think, more than anything.
What's he done? I've missed this.
He went big on the It's Not a Pen.
Yes, he was just quite adamant there wasn't a pen, and he got into sort of handbags with Martin Keown over it on Match of the Day. And then went on Twitter and said to people that they don't know football. So, you know, decisions
Dan,
were made.
Dan knows ball. Dan can comment because he knows ball.
Dan definitely knows ball.
Yeah, Dan does know ball.
Dan knows ball.
I've been there. Yeah.
Okay. On the plus side, when we were looking at sort of old North London derby footage ahead of last week's pod, Genius in that 5-1 League Cup win, brilliant.
Yeah.
Forgotten that.
He loved the North London derby goal, didn't he?
Yeah. He
scored
in the 4-4.
Yeah, he scored in the 4-4. He scored in the 2-2 last minute wild lane. He scored in the... I think he scored in the first leg of the 5-1-1 as well, actually.
Great record. Was there any other bits that people wanted to sling in the Ugly or the Beautiful, or are we good to move on? Do you think we've done enough on the Doherty situation?
Let's give the guy a break.
I don't want to shine a light on it. I don't want to make it personal with him.
I mean, I'd be interested to know kind of what people want to see against Villa, just assuming that Son's not fit, which I think is a safe assumption, because obviously Lamella will be suspended. So, do you know,
Eric.
Dele into the front with Lucas and Bailey the side.
I think that's how it works for me.
What's happened to Stevie Bergwijn? I mean, I know he was on.
Oh God, Bergwijn exists.
Yeah,
He came on, didn't he? And had that big chance with Bale, that gorgeous left footed cross. So maybe it's an opportunity for him. Massive opportunity for him.
Lo Celso?
Yeah.
I'd like to see him get some minutes. I'd love to see. I mean, it feels like we could probably do with some players who didn't play in the North London derby playing in the next game. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's bring in the others, get the others in. I'd love to see Dele in, obviously. It felt like half time yesterday that Dele should have come on. I'd like to see Dele. I'd like to see Bergwijn. I'm not sure.
Rather annoying one to add into this is that we've also got to field a team against Zagreb away. Suddenly you're like, oof, who plays in that?
Well, Lamella for one.
Yeah. Throwing punches in Zagreb.
Sent off twice in a week.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Carlos Vinicius, I think Kane after yesterday, well, maybe after yesterday, he wants to get a few goals under as well, but it must have been so frustrating. And you saw him get frustrated yesterday. That sort of shoulder charge on Gabriel was the sign of a man who was very frustrated.
Did people think that was as bad as it was being?
Absolutely no chance. It's the same old boring narrative around Harry Kane that Arsenal fans have tried for years. There was Arsenal red fans, cards being asked for. I was like, all right, lads, calm down.
They're essentially Roy Keane in the tunnel going, you're not a nice guy.
Do you remember when Leno got that injury against Brighton last year, just after the restart, and they were like, and after like Mopé pushed him or whatever when he was jumping, and it was like every striker does that. Like, you guys have been living under a rock. Like, stop crying, Jesus! You won the match. Shut up.
Okay, let's try and get that 11 down then. So I think it's Vinicius. We think Lamella plays. Bergwijn probably against Zagreb as well. So who slots in? Is it Dele?
I think Dele probably, but then I like to see Dele gets an hour.
Yeah.
Winks, Sissoko.
I'd like to see Winks in there. Maybe.
Sissoko.
Who needs Bale?
Those two work really nicely together.
that was the other really depressing thing, was we brought on Sissoko for Bale, That song just started ringing around my head, and I was like, "We need Bale."
Sort of echoing in the back of your mind.
Yeah. The sound of silence.
It was like a Radiohead version of "Who Needs Bale" when we've got Sissoko.
Brilliant. And then, I mean, will it be Hugo in goal?
Why risk Joe Hart now? Is the question.
I think it'll be Lloris.
Yeah.
I think it'll be Aurier, Dyer, Davis and Sanchez probably.
Yeah. And do you know what? It's suddenly one thing from this weekend is definitely brought into focus that our season will basically hinge on the Europa League, won't it?
And the inevitable clash with Arsenal.
Well, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Well, we'll look forward to that one. it's been a real pleasure breaking down us getting turned over by Arsenal. Thank you so much for listening. Back again on Friday, where hopefully is the Europa League draw this Friday?
Is it midday on Friday?
Ooh, so maybe we might be breaking. We might have to do the Twitter klaxon siren thing and write breaking and deliver news that's already come out on various other platforms and claim it as our own.
Shots fired.
I hope you enjoyed the pod today. Please do leave us a rating or a review if you didn't. Think about subscribing. We'll see you all on Friday. Be well. Take care. What a feeling, what a night.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.